everybody. My name is Glenn Hill.
I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast, and we're going to do another player overview or view, I don't know, summary today on Juan Martín Del Potro.
We're going to talk about Delpo, and only Delpo. That's what matters.
Yes, and Paul, if you hear any slurping, that's my my afternoon coffee trying to kick in. So let's put Delpo. Why is Delpo Delpo? Like, why does the guy get his own nickname?
Yeah, so we're just trying to
and you know what? How does he become world famous in the tennis world at least? Let's talk about that a little bit. Put him in context.
Normally, we start talking about a player in context. Like, okay, what's interesting about this guy? Why do we want to talk about him? Right before we started, you said, "What makes Delpo Delpo?" And that really stood out to me because I think that's a really good question that people don't really answer. Like, we know he won a slam in 2009. He wins the U.S. Open, wins the final in five sets over Roger Federer.
Right. But there's a mystique about Delpo that there are players that have similar or even greater accomplishments, but they don't have the mystique that Delpo does. I mean, like, I think Delpo, if you take Andy Roddick, for example, another solo slam winner, there's a mystique about Delpo that Roddick doesn't have.
Roddick would have, by the numbers, a tremendously more successful career when you look at everything. I mean, Delpo's got 20 singles titles plus 9 finals. So he's very good in finals. He's winning more than...
When he makes a final, he's exceedingly likely to win the tournament.
Yeah. Even his odds go way up when he wins this first round. But this is the thing that really stands out to me about Delpo is he's not steady like Roddick was. Where Roddick, once he made it to number one, well, he won a slam. Then he made it to number one. And it was years before he even dropped out of the top five. Now, obviously, Delpo's had some injury issues.
Right, but that doesn't paint the entire picture there. And that's one of the things I think that makes Delpo such an interesting guy to talk about is because... To me, part of the reason he carries this mystique is twofold. There's the element where when he comes out and plays, he can play some very scintillating tennis. He can beat anybody on any given day. The flip side of that is that even when you account for the injuries, you take that aside, there's still a lack of consistency that we would like to see or typically expect from the kind of player that gets the type of reputation that Delpo has. Where it's like almost when you listen to Delpo fans, like people expect Delpo to win almost every match that he plays, and it doesn't really matter who he's playing. And the reality is he actually loses quite a few matches.
It's like 50-50.
Yeah, like there's a lot of people out there that he loses to in times when he quote unquote shouldn't. But the reality is I don't think that's really actually true. I think that the fact is that he loses, the losses that he has are reflective of the lack of consistency in his performance.
Yeah, the thing that really kind of encapsulates his career to me is here's a guy who won a slam, who when he first came onto the tour was just on fire. Like, oh my God, he's so big. He's got such a big game. Can anyone beat him? And he gets up for number, like to play big matches, kind of Nick Kyrgios style. Like he does well when he's playing the guy who's currently ranked number one. And he's beaten everybody. He's beaten Fed. He's beaten Nadal. He's beaten Djokovic. He's beaten them all multiple times, which is a very rare thing.
Yeah, not a lot of people can say that.
And like I said before, he won a slam. And yet the same guy has not won a Masters 1000. He's
ever
been three finals.
Right.
And he's lost to Murray, Nadal, and Djokovic in those finals. Not bad losses. But...
No.
You know, something's weird about that, right? Like, on the one hand, I feel like he's the giant killer. But on the other hand, I feel like it should be with an asterisk. Like, giant killer sometimes or when he feels like it.
Well, I don't think it's a when he feels like a thing. But so to keep putting him in perspective here. So we are talking about a guy who won the U.S. Open in 2009. He does have 20 titles. Do you have the spread on where he's won his titles off the top of your head? In terms of surfaces, I think his best service traditionally is hard courts.
Yeah, he's never won a title on grass, which also stands out to me for someone who is, I mean, like, come on. he's huge, right?
Yeah.
Like he's a giant and he's got a massive game. You would think grass would be really good. For him, he actually has not lost a final on clay. He's 4-0 in clay court finals.
Yeah. So he has four clay court finals, four clay court titles.
Right.
And then 16 hard courts.
16 hard court titles.
Yeah.
So the clay court titles are smaller titles, though. You know, where.
Right. He's not out there winning, like, Paris or.
No, he's not won a thousand.
Yeah. No, so exactly. Yeah. So let's get started then on the nuts and bolts of this. Because, like, you know, when we talk about the lack of consistency, part of this comes to me down to the style of player that Del Potro is. Because I look at Del Potro, and this is a guy who plays very flat, very low, relatively speaking, over the net, and very aggressive. He's not sitting back and waiting for play to come to him. And I don't mean that in a positioning sense, although I suppose that applies a little bit. But in terms of his mentality, like, he's not waiting around for you to make a mistake. He is not also, you know, when we talk about Thiem, we talked about the way that he is kind of waiting for you to make a mistake, but he's doing it in a way where Thiem is just hitting the ball really hard and heavy all the time when he's making a mistake. Dopo's like actively, like, I'm going to hit a forehand winner on every point that I play.
That's interesting to me because I look at him a little bit differently. Like, he does hit a lot of winners, but especially earlier in his career, I think that he was hitting the ball big enough where he could just hit through you.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't like
he's going to open up the court and hit a winner into the open space.
He might think,
I'm going to hit a winner. I'm not saying that that's what you said, but I'm saying like when people think about it, like generally when most guys on the tour are going to hit a winner, they have to open the court
space. They're creating the opportunity for the winner first. You know, I think Dopo feels like he's going to hit a forehand winner on you, and he's done this, where he's going to hit the ball 3 feet from you.
Right.
He's still going to be a winner because he's just going to hit it that stinking big.
He's going to beat you with sheer velocity, and he actually feels like he believes, I think, that he can hit 100 mile an hour forehand from anywhere in the court, and that he can just, if he just catches you a little bit off guard or a little bit off balance, he can just beat you with that velocity.
Oh, absolutely.
Almost no matter where you are.
And we've seen it happen, and it does happen. You know, so that's the style of player that I see him being, is this guy who's very aggressive off the ground. You know, I think he can play all court tennis. I think he's a competent volleyer. But this is a game that's built entirely around this forehand.
Yeah.
And so if we look at what assets he brings to the court, look, I think obviously the forehand is the no-brainer. I mean, it's one of the biggest weapons on the tour. People would probably like to say that it is the biggest forehand on the tour, but I don't think that's true. I think Sock has more velocity and spin for average. There are other people out there who I think actually in a lot of ways have more effective forehands. But his is absolutely up there. It's among the top of the top most kind of powerful ground strokes in the game.
It's definitely one of the fastest. I mean, it's one of the top five fastest. I'm not sure where it ranks. I know it's below Sock. I mean, Sock's got the fastest with the most spin at the same time. But like, the truth is people are more intimidated going against Delpo's forehand than they are against Sock. I mean, I'm just telling you from a locker room perspective.
Sure.
Like, The thing, you know, when Sock smacks a forehand, like he launches his body into it, he's putting in maximal effort. You get the sense when Delpo's hitting that he's hitting his forehand like 50% effort, but it's like 2 miles an hour slower than Sock.
Right.
Like there's this sense that he has gears to go to that he almost never goes to. But there's an intimidation factor there. People play what they think he can do instead of just playing what he's actually doing.
Right. And I mean, given his ability to hit winners from almost anywhere in the court at any moment off that forehand, like it's understandable why you might do that and why you might think that way. Right.
Yeah.
And look, that could be wrong also, folks. I just want to make this clear. Like there are matches where Dopo hits bigger than Sock, and there's matches where Sock hits bigger. I mean, you know, a lot of this depends on the playing conditions and the specific opponent. But point being, like, it's not – Delpo's forehand is not something that's at this complete other level from what anybody else can hit, which I think is how a lot of people view that shot, is it's just so huge. It's bigger than anything out there. And the reality is there are other forehands out there that are comparably big, but this is the centerpiece of his game. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think his serve is an asset, but it's also always been a slight disappointment to me, which is going to be feel. It's funny to say that about an asset, right? Because it is a good serve. It is a good...
not just to you, but to me too, and a lot of people have the same perspective. It sounds right. like what you're about to say is that for a guy who can hit the ball as hard as he can, and whose timing is so good, and who's as tall and as strong as he is, it feels like he should be serving 70%. He should never have bad service days, and he should hit even more aces and just have an easier time on his serve than he actually does.
Right. And this is interesting because his serve isn't that great. I mean, he is 6'6", and the motion, it's a nice, clean motion. Like, there's nothing glaringly wrong with it. But when push comes to shove, you know, when you just look at the career numbers, and he's very consistently a good but not great server. And so it stands as an asset, but it's also, to me, always been a little bit of a disappointment. You know, I think for his height, he moves pretty well, but I wouldn't call that one of his assets. To me, that's kind of a little bit of a wash. Volley's a little bit the same way. You know, I don't know how you rate his volleys, or if this is where we start talking about liabilities.
You know, yeah, I'd probably put him in the liability category. They're pretty average. He's a little bit better than average in the sense that if he's coming forward behind a huge forehand, like he can hit some good volleys sometimes, but they're not consistent. Like, he'll have days where he volleys well and then days where he really doesn't volley well enough at
right.
all.
This is the thing to me when I think about Delpo's volleys, and I think you're right, they do belong more in the liabilities column, is that I'll never see Delpo work his way to the net on the strength of his volley in the way that, you know, like a genuine serve volley, like a Pat Rafter or a Tim Henman could do, where they're, you know, consistently taking knee-high balls around the service line and coming out of that situation ahead. Delpo's not coming out of the situation ahead consistently.
No, they're definitely not of that caliber.
Right. And so...
He's much more like he's a guy who's actually got pretty good hands, so he can hit some great drop volleys on occasion, and he can make some nice angles and hit a couple of pickup shots. Like, he can do some stuff that'll surprise you if you think this guy can't volley. But the truth is, if you watch him practice, like, he doesn't practice his volleys. He practices them the same way now that he did 6 years ago. Like, he's not trying to develop that part of his game.
No, he's in maintenance mode when it comes to the volley.
So they're just kind of good enough to polish off easy balls. You know, but if he does have easy balls, I think they're good enough. Like, some guys really can't hit, like, they really are going to lose points if they have to hit volleys. Delpo isn't going to do that. He's going to make a couple of balls. He's just not going to do that much with them.
Right. Yeah, no, he's not lighting the world on fire in that regard. And so that brings me to return of serve, which I think these days, I go back and forth on this because I really think you have to split his return of serve into the forehand return and the backhand return, because his prospects change dramatically depending on which one he's hitting.
Yeah, and this is a tough one for me because before he had multiple wrist surgeries, I loved his backhand return.
Yeah.
But lately, since he's been back on the tour steadily for the last couple years, he pretty much just pushes it up the middle. Like, it's just not – it's too middle, and it doesn't have enough on it.
Right. No, he's definitely dropped. I mean, to put it in perspective, folks, like, in 2017, he won 21% of his return games, right? And when we put that in, you know, so Diego Schwartzman is winning 35% of his return games. Rafael Nadal's winning 33%. You know, Bautista Agut's winning 30%. Delpo at his peak, like in 2009, was winning in the, you know, mid-high 20s, and now he's down to 21. So he's like, return to game has dropped over the few years. And that's one of those things that I do attribute directly to the injury. I think that has impacted his game significantly, specifically off the backhand side. And so, you know, I put the return to serve under the liabilities column at this point in his career just because he's not so mobile that you can't get at his backhand, and once you do get at his backhand, he's not hurting you very much off that side.
Yeah, and for guys like Schwartzman who don't – like, Schwartzman's a tiny guy if you don't know him. He's like 5'5", okay? He's the smallest guy in the top 100. He doesn't have a huge serve. It's a good serve for a guy his size, but it's very much not good enough to really, really stretch out Delpo. But you can jam him into the body really on both sides because he doesn't move quickly enough off the return.
Yeah.
So there's just too many options. Good servers that can stretch him out, can hurt him. You know, the only thing is you can't sit a ball, like you can't hit a ball into his forehand wheelhouse.
Oh, God, like, no. That's not crazy. Like, there's no coming back from that one. Yeah.
There's no coming back from the forehand wheelhouse. And so that's a very real threat. But, you know, you can just power serves as hard as you can right at his chest and usually get middle balls. And that's just, that's again, like this is one of those things where he's a slam winner. He's a guy who has an outsized reputation. For someone to be that good, you really need to have a better return than that.
Yeah. And again, I think like prior to the wrist injuries and the surgeries, like the return to serve was good, quite good. And now I think it does fall, you know, into a liability. So if we talk about the key patterns and strategies for Dopa when he goes out to play a match, again, like this is a guy who especially these days, his game is built around that forehand. He's hitting a lot of sliced backhands since his return from his last wrist surgery. He hits over the backhand some, but when he does, I've noticed that it tends to be very day-to-day. Even within a match sometimes, it's very patchy. He'll have long stretches where he's not making great contact on that backhand side. You know, he's kind of bunting the ball more at the center. There's not a lot of velocity on it. And then, you know, he'll have these periods where he's sharp, and he'll actually get it genuinely cross court and put a little juice on it. But it almost seems to me that when he does that, it has a price for him. You know, like it hurts. Either it's painful or it causes discomfort. Because I just don't see him come out and really go at that backhand consistently very often.
There's a good reason for that. Del Potro, since he's come back from surgery, is a guy who has traveled essentially without a coach. And he travels instead with a physical trainer. And then his team is really, it's like a group of mates, right? He keeps guys around him that kind of keep him motivated and that, you know, are good friends. But he doesn't have a proper coach that he listens to and that he has a proper coaching relationship with. And when you look at his backhand, ever since he came back from the latest surgery, he really just doesn't have confidence in it, in the sense that he doesn't have confidence in his wrist and in his ability to go after that shot day in and day out.
Right.
It's not about whether or not he has confidence that he can hit a backhand. I think he fully believes that he can unload on a backhand. The issue is he thinks, if I do this, I might not be able to play tomorrow, or I might not be able to play in the, you know, two rounds from now, or whatever it's going
to
be.
I might not be able to play for the next 6 months, conceivably.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, that's got to be in the back of his head.
That's the implication, is that if he has to rest in a tournament, that he might not be back for a while. And he's very much afraid of having another surgery. He's very much afraid, in a sense, about whether or not they truly fix the problem. Because remember, he had one surgery and supposedly it was fixed, but his pain didn't go away.
Right.
Then he came back and did it again.
Yeah,
and
so
still,
it's a legitimate
after a couple
fear.
Surgeries, he still has pain when he really hits that backhand. So, you know, you won't see him crushing backhands in practice for hours. It doesn't happen because he seems to be afraid to do it. So he's basically learned how to play, I mean, I think in his mind, with half of a left wrist. Like, he's playing injured out there in a very real way.
Sure. No, that's fair. So, you know, his game really is about setting up the forehand. And this is not an uncommon game style. There's actually a lot of similarities to me off the ground in the mentality that Dopo has now with Dimitrov, actually, who we talked about recently, where he's using the sliced backhand a lot to move the ball around the court and stay in rallies till he gets that forehand that he wants to be in control. But to me, like, his game is all about that forehand, and he's serving.
That's the only place he's finishing points.
Right. Well, I mean, his serve is still good.
Well, his serve,
yeah.
But I mean, from the ground.
Outside of that, from the ground, yeah, that's it for him, basically. I mean, he'll hit a backhand pass when he has to, but he is not setting up to, like, take a backhand down the line for a winner. The
no,
way
but
that, you know, like, Wawrinka might or, you know, Djokovic will.
You know, that's actually really interesting because when you say that he hit a backhand pass when he has to, he actually hits the backhand much better when he's passing.
Oh, he plays the backhand much better when he has to in general. Like, if you force him to come up with the goods in the moment when he just reacts, he'll still hit some great backhands. And that's the thing with me where in the matches, like, it's just so patchy because he'll go through periods where I think he gets so caught up in the battle that he forgets to be afraid to hit the backhand.
Right.
And then he hits it really well. And then I think, you know, maybe he gets a little twinge or whatever, and the fear comes back, and then he gets tentative again. And it's almost fascinating watching it come and go. But, yeah, this is a guy who's very much... And understand, like, Delpo can hit forehand winners from anywhere in the court. And so when we talk about him setting up to hit the forehand, really, he just wants to get one. Because if he gets one, he feels like either he can hit the shot that's going to end the rally on that one, or he's going to hit the ball hard enough and well enough that he's probably just going to be able to get another forehand and then get another forehand until he finishes things off. And that's really where things lie for him. And look, I think he plays a fairly intelligent game.
Yes.
He's not out there playing thoughtlessly. I think he's using patterns effectively and well.
Naturally, he's a very
intuitively good player, yes.
Yeah, he's an intuitively good player. And even the guys in his own circle will say that like, he just knows how to play. He just knows where to hit the ball.
Yeah, he reads the game well.
He's basically hitting the same two shots. Well, okay, so he hits over the backhand, which basically is the same ball to your opponent. Like, it feels the same every time.
Right.
And the forehand is basically the same all the time also. And then you can add the slice backhand into that, but it's not like a Dolgopolov or like a Santoro, like, crazy slice backhand. It's just
it's a good, solid slice.
So he's moving the ball around very linearly, very predictably. He has to be better in order to play the way that he does. Like, I think that the finer points of his patterns are actually really good. What he's missing is really the discipline and the explicit knowledge to only play his really good patterns and to kind of maximize all of those as much as he could.
And the other piece of the puzzle to me a little bit is, I think that he has the tools to use a little more variety in his game than he does. I think that he can hit a heavier ball on the forehand. I've seen him do it.
He's working on that in a sense. Like, his ball has a lot more topspin now than it used to.
Yeah, agreed.
The thing is, there's a little bit of that. I want to call it like the Andy Roddick syndrome, where when the idea of being Andy Roddick, when he showed up on the tour, was hitting the ball almost purely flat in a way that we really almost never see. And then he completely transitioned to hitting the ball really, really spinny and high over the net, but sacrificing ever hitting really big flat forehands.
Right.
And so with Delpo, it seems to be like he's adding more and more topspin to his forehand. And it seems to be that he's not just uncorking on the triple digit forehand as much as he could.
Right. Well, so this is the thing to me is when I talk about him having the tools to be able to use more variety, I think that without massively changing his game, he has opportunities where he could open the court up a little bit more. You know, instead of playing power through the corner, add more velocity and bring the ball up higher so that it's up, you know, coming through the court above the corner. And get people out of position and play and then finish on that next shot. There's, you know, the slice, I think sometimes, like you said, he just hits a very predictable straight ahead slice ball. There's nothing funky about it. He's not really playing with depth the way that some of the more astute players on the slice do, where they'll push deep and then play short down the line or short angle cross score. To me, he's hitting a very similar slice backhand over and over and over again. And there's opportunities there for him to create some more variety. Like, and this is the thing that really stands out to me about why Delpo hasn't ever found that consistency, even when you take the injuries out of it. Because this is the big thing to me. Like, when people talk about his injury rate and like the impact the injuries have had on his career, I mean, his winning percentage on service games is basically the same as it was when he won the U.S. Open. It hasn't changed. It varies a couple of percent from year to year, but it's always hovering in that 82.5% to 84.5% of service games held. His return games, as we discussed, that's dropped about 5 or 6% over the last decade.
That's a lot.
And that's a lot. No, that is absolutely a lot. But
that's a lot.
But there's that part where, you know, for him to really be at that elite, elite level where he's a top five guy, you know, year in, year out, you have to either have that win percentage on the serve be higher, because, you know, right, when he's in the low 80s, you know, you've got a guy like Fed that's in the high 80s, and you've got these other 6 foot six guys that are, you know, significantly higher than that even. Mm-hmm. You know, so he has to either be winning a lot more of his service games. Like in 2009 when he won the US Open, like Andy Roddick's service games one was at almost 91%.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that was really, and that was really on the strength, not, that wasn't just behind the strength of the serve, that was the serve plus one.
The serve plus one, the serve plus that forehand, right? You got John Isner's at 89% that year, and then there's this, you know, this jump, you get down, and then you eventually, you know, you get down to, you know, like Milos Raonic was at almost 94% that year. Which is crazy. I mean, that's an absolutely insane stat. You know, and Topo's down there. He's not up in that area, even in the year that he had, you know, like his best slam result. And so you take out he either has to be a better, more effective server or a much better returner to really be up there year, you know, week in, week out, going deep at all the tournaments. That's a problem. So, like, when we look forward to what we can expect from, you know, Delpo in 2018, this is a really interesting one to me, because obviously he's done a great job of climbing back from injury. I mean, he sits at, what, is it 11 in the rankings now? A little higher than that?
I want to say he's 11, but I'm going off of...
the internet. I'm going to pull it up right now to make sure, so I'm not going from...
You can pull it up.
Yeah, he's at 11.
I'm just going off my...
Yeah, no, I was right. He's at 11. We were both right.
No, you were right. Don't take it away from me.
You were also right. So he's sitting at 11 in the rankings right now, but that's a huge climb from where he was when the year started.
Yeah, I mean, he's really done a great job of getting himself up in the rankings. Like, it's pretty impressive, basically just traveling with a fitness coach. I mean, this is right. The intuitive aspect of his tennis. Like, he kind of knows how to get himself up there. So yeah.
He was 38 at the start of the year, up to 11. But the year before that, like at the start of 2016, I mean, he was ranked 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, so he's gone from 1,000 to number 11 in the space of 24 months, which is, that's very impressive. Just to put that in context, like, that's a very impressive accomplishment.
To be knocking on the door of the top 10 means...
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so the big question is, what happens next? Because now when we look at the rankings and we try to put Delpo in context here, the names ahead of him are obviously people like Nadal and Federer. Then you've got this whole clump of players that have really, really broken through finally. Goffin, Dimitrov, Zverev, Thiem. You know, Cilic is still hovering around up there. Jack Sock's finally through. Wawrinka is still top 10 and about to come back. You know, Karina Buster's busted up there. You know, right on his heels, you've got Djokovic. You've got Sam Curry, just had his career best year. Kevin Anderson just had a great year. You know, he is surrounded by talent. And so the question is, what can we see him managing to accomplish, assuming that he stays healthy, in 2018?
Well, to me, I have to back up a little bit to answer this one. Delpo is the talent. And if you... I want to go back real quick and look at, you know, what's an asset for him and what's a liability. I look at the slice backhand and the serve, and I put these in the same category of being an asset technically,
a
qualified asset, because technically they're good strokes, they're good shots. Like, his slice backhand is very good since the surgeries. He's hit a ton of them. And he's worked on it. You know, I think there was a time when he didn't know if he was ever going to be able to really hit his two-hander again. So, you know, that's a good shot. But like the serve, the pattern use and the tactics that he goes to are not top five material for me.
No. So
like, he just doesn't use it well
enough. Here's an interesting thing that I just pulled up that I was curious about. So... you know, when I'm looking at the serving intelligence aspect, for example, so when he played Dimitrov at Cincinnati this year, okay, lost to Dimitrov in straight sets. Guess how many wide serves he hit on the deuce court to Dimitrov's forehand in two sets? 6-3, 7-5.
I have no idea.
Zero.
Come on.
He didn't hit a single wide serve on the deuce court for on the first serve. The entire match.
I mean, that's everyone else on the tour that is looking at statistics in a basic way. Anyone is going to serve out there at 70% of the time on average. At least you're going to serve 50-50. Right. At least.
So here's the thing. Like, if you take Dimitrov in that same match, and you know how good Delpo's forehand is, on the deuce court, he hit 42% of his serves wide into Delpo's forehand. That's almost half the serve straight into Delpo's biggest strength. I say right. Straight into. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously
he's stretching. It's not straight into. He's trying to, right. He's stretching him
but
out there. But the point is,
his strength.
He's still going to the forehand side because it's still a better play.
Right. It's you have to do that. And so there's that part where as much as Delpo, I think, is playing intuitively good tennis in the ground stroke rally, once the rally has started,
right.
There's a part where he's not doing a great job on the serve. You know, and the same thing, like, if you look at his serving patterns, his second serve on the ag court lands in the same line every time.
It's just not good enough. There has to be more. Like, Delpo is going to have to work on more things. He's going to have to work harder and on more things. He needs to know that even if I'm playing Grigor Dimitrov or Roger Federer, I need to hit at least 40 or 50% of my serves out wide. Like, yeah. You have to be able to do that. And, I mean, what are you going to say? Like, he's 6'7", knocking on the door for 6'8", and he can't hit the wide serve good enough? Like, come on. Like, that's just not good enough, right? So, for me, he's a guy who has all the tools who, if he got motivated or if he got the right people on his team – or if he makes the right commitments, he can do anything. Sure. But more than likely, like, I have him right around the same area that he is right now, in that number 8 to number 15 slot in 2018.
Can you narrow it down more than that? Because, I think he's going to finish the year ranked 9.
Well,
specifically 9. Not 10, not 8, not 11. I think he's going to finish the year ranked 9.
The honest answer to that is, I think I could narrow that down. I haven't done the work to look at all the other people, because I think I can figure out how many points Delpo is probably going to have by the end of the year, because I think he has a certain savviness about how he does his scheduling.
Right. I
just don't know what that point total, if that's going to put him as the number 8 guy or the number 15 guy. That comes down to everybody else. My sense is that it's going to be a little lower than that, because I think that either Novak or Stan or Murray are going to be back up there. I don't really see, you know, everyone that's up in the top 8 right now falling out of it. Like, my sense is that it's going to be more in that 10 to 12 range. Mm-hmm. But I certainly wouldn't be surprised if we see him in London at the end of the year. I think that's a big goal for him. And the one thing that I do feel strongly about is, I think he's probably going to win a 250. He's probably going to final like a medium size, like 500, or maybe like semifinal 1,000 kind of tournament. And then I wouldn't be surprised to see him in a big time final, or maybe even win his first 1,000 and pick up some big points at one point. But, you know, he's not a guy who I think is going to be living up to his seed week in and week out.
Yeah, and so you don't see him winning a slam. Do you see him winning another slam ever?
To me, it's a toss-up. It's 50-50. Because he still can play for a long time. And he has the kind of game where if he goes out there and goes balls to the wall for 6 months, then I think he probably can win a slam. I think that I don't see him winning a slam playing the way he's played over the last year, but the way he's played really over the last year has been very conservative. It's been very much like he's had a strategy of getting himself back up to around this spot in the rankings. Now I think he has a mental shift where now he's going to go for it a little bit more.
Right.
So, you know, the real question to me is, we know his patterns and stuff aren't good enough. If we assume that he's not going to just drastically change all that stuff, is that going to be good enough to beat both the established guys that are still out there that have won multiple slams and the young guys that have much better patterns and can handle Del Po's big ball.
Right. Well, so this is the thing to me. I don't think there's a lot of people out there. I mean, there are people out there who have much better patterns. There's not a lot of people out there who have much better patterns. The problem to me is twofold. And I'm going to flat out say I don't think he'll ever win another slam because, one, his serve isn't quite good enough. Like, he needs to be a better spot server. For a guy as tall as he is, he's just not hitting the spots enough. And then the second part of it is that return game. If he can't pick the return numbers up, he's not a real threat. I mean, he'd have to have the 2 weeks of his life to win another slam, and I think he's already had that happen to him once. I can't see it happening to him again. And this is the biggest part of the puzzle, and you and I have touched on this before on the podcast when we talked about him. He doesn't have the work ethic that he needs to do the things that he has to do at this point to improve enough to win another slam. Because this is the guy, and you pointed this out, and I hadn't really thought about this, who was out for an extended period of time because of a wrist injury and came back out of shape.
Yeah. Not like, he didn't do his fitness work for like, I don't know, ages while he was
right.
out. I mean, he wasn't running.
Yeah, like this is the thing to me. It's like we're expecting Djokovic to come back to the Australian Open in January after his elbow injury. And does anybody for a second have any expectation that Novak Djokovic of the last 5 years is going to be the guy who's going to come back in Melbourne and be huffing and puffing after a few games of tennis? Oh, heck no. He's going to come out and he's going to be shredded.
Novak Djokovic is not going to be tired.
He's going to be running marathons for his warm-up before the match. I mean, this is, and then run a half afterwards for the cool-down. Like, this guy's going to come back in cardiovascularly in incredible shape. Whereas Del Po, in the same situation, did not. Like, he doesn't. He's good and he works hard, but he doesn't work as hard as he needs to. This isn't a guy who's going to put in the long hours to get those few extra little things that he needs. I mean, at the top of the game where he's at, these margins are small. If he improved his first serve by 4%, he's just a significantly better player. And by that 4%, we're talking about moving the location of that first serve by 4 inches. You know, like on the wide serve of the deuce court, if he brought it 4 inches up, which he can do, I mean, like that's about, like, he's almost a foot deeper landing his first serve going wide on the deuce court than Fed is. And he's got 5 or 6 inches on Fed. You know, there's that part where he just, like, those little improvements he needs, those are the things that take him next level that make him, like, a legit slam contender.
So
and I don't see him doing that.
It seems clear from his career that he doesn't know how to do those things on his own, because here we are at this age after all these years. I mean, 2009, he wins the slam. Eight years later, he hasn't figured out how to move the serve 4 or 5 inches, okay? So he doesn't know how to do it on his own. So either he's been studying it this whole time, which he's not. I mean, I think we can say that comfortably. Or he's going to team up with someone who knows how to do those things with him as a partner, and that's going to have a better chance at least of getting it done.
Right,
so
but do we see that happening?
I think we're going to know when he shows up to Australia. Does he show up to Melbourne with a coach? Like,
right,
with somebody
if you're gonna
who's
hire
respected
somebody, yeah,
and who has an opinion.
This is the time to do it, because you've got the off-season, you've got the month. Like, now is the time that if you're serious about improving your game, you're not out sipping mojitos on a beach in Mexico right now. You're out in the practice court hitting buckets of serves.
Well, and the last thing that I want to say about him is that the thing that really gives me pause, and this is a big part of the equation that I look at as to how I don't have him ranked higher at the end of 2018 in my predictions, is he's been 2 full years back on the tour now. And, you know, I asked him actually in a locker room over a year ago about a coach. And his response to me was very candid, like, you know, I don't feel like I need a coach. I feel like I just need to be healthy. I just need to be fit. I know how to play tennis. You know, I'm just taking my time. I just want to keep playing. Like, he just wanted to play. And, you know, I thought that was very honest, and that's cool. But it's been 2 years.
Right.
Okay. So if you have any intention of developing your game, like, what stopped him from hiring a coach 6 months ago? Or 4 months ago, or 12 months ago. So I'll be a little bit surprised and impressed if he shows up with somebody in Australia. Now, what I can say is that I know that some of the people around him, for a fact, are telling him, hey, you need to get someone who is going to tell you what to do. and is going to stand by their guns and is going to make you a better player. Because by all rights, people think he has the game that he should be a slam contender all the time.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think with the right coach, he would be a slam contender. I think he, if he had the right coach, I think he would win a slam. But that's only with that piece of the puzzle. And so, right. You know, and that's, look, folks, we love Dopo. Great guy.
That needs to be said. I feel like we can be brutally honest with him about him, because he's just an honest, genuine dude.
Right, like, and the reality is, like, we're recording that. We're going to be honest with everybody. Like we're not here, you know. Like, Delpo's not paying us to do a review on him. Like, we're here talking about tennis players. And this is what we have to say about the guy. Like, he is a great guy, like a genuinely fantastic person. This is just the reality of, you know, what we see for him moving forward. And so, you know, I think it'll be interesting, but I also would be surprised. Like, I don't see him. I think because he's starting the year ranked more highly this year, he's going to get slightly better draws. You know, I think that'll be enough for him to gain a couple spots up in the rankings. But it's so busy up there right now. I think, you know, if this was 5 years ago, he'd probably be like a 6 or 7 by the end of the year next year. But in right. this day and age right now, I think he's going to finish the year around 9. I didn't say around 9. I've said 9 on the dot.
Said 9.
If he's healthy. And if
Zverev wasn't there and team wasn't there.
Yeah, and I'm just adding this. Only if he's healthy. If he's healthy, I think he finishes the year at 9. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But maybe you think we're crazy. I don't know. If you do, or if you don't.
I think you're crazy.
Well, that's fine. I don't worry.
I mean,
about
not for this, just in general.
Okay. Reach out and let us know what you think and share your thoughts on Dimitrov. You can tweet at us, me at Glenn S. Hill and Jacob.
You can get both of us at Tactical Tennis. You can email Glenn at glenn@tacticaltennis.com. Just Jacob. Let him know how crazy he is.
Or you can email Jacob at jacob@tacticaltennis.com and tell him that he's nuts. And please share the podcast and the website with your friends, because we don't advertise it anywhere. And you guys and girls are the only way that it grows. So,
most definitely. And if there's anyone in particular that you'd like to hear us riff on for about 30 minutes and go over their game in a little bit more detail, then please do email us and hit us up.
Yes.
Or send us a note. Instagram, you can also get us at Tactical Tennis.
And
I think
note,
that's it for tonight.
Yeah, it is. It is. Have a good day, everybody. Good night. Good week. And we'll catch up with you soon.
See you guys.